welcome into another episode of Shark and the Dog. We are recapping the Patriots' horrific loss to the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo last Saturday night. 47-17 was not quite the 17-12 Bills victory that I predicted. It was a lot wider of a margin than that. We are going to get into what went wrong, what little went right for us on that, and then maybe towards the end touch on a little bit of a little bit of the season, then we'll get out of here. But first, to my right is the Shark himself, Mr. Dave Nardella. Dave, how are you?
John, I appreciate you inviting me back after all those predictions last week.
We will definitely get into your thoughts on the defense after last Saturday. And in the great state of California is Mr. Matt Kovac. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well. You know, when you get to a certain age, you realize there's two kinds of people in this world. Those who like Mutt Lang-made music and those who don't like music made by Mutt Lang.
All right. And in the Granite State is the dog father himself, Mr. Paul Murphy. Paul, how are you?
Very good, John. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm your host, John Murphy. Dave, I'll pass the ball to you. Like I said, there are a couple of things you can take away from this game. I was not disappointed with Mac's performance. Was I incorrect about us having the quarterback advantage in the game? I was. But outside of that interception, which, if I can say, is the best playoff interception I've seen. That was amazing. Like a diving play going away and double coverage. You can say what you want about Aguilar. If he was a great receiver, you know, maybe he, you know, trails back to break that up at least. But can't take away from how good of an interception that was. And even if it falls in Aguilar's hands, does the defense have what it takes to make it a shootout? And does the offense gain enough momentum from that? I don't think that's the case. Maybe you lose by 20 if they make that catch. And it can also get into the other point at large. And when you've got a defense that's been playing that poorly for that long in these last few games, did it make sense for us to kick off there? Or should we have received and tried to set the tone for the game? A lot of questions to be had on what the hell was going on the coaching side of the ball. But, Dave, I know you got a lot to say about this game and particularly your thoughts on the defense. Go ahead.
I mean, the it was an old school straight up ass kicking by the Bills.
It's like a Pats Colts game in the Andrew Luck era.
I mean, Josh Allen could do whatever he want on you. Devin Singletary ran, you know, 6 yards a carry on you. You let Dawson Knox look like Gronkowski at times, and the defense got no pressure, no sacks the entire game. They made Josh Allen look, you know, like the best quarterback we've ever seen. He's a great quarterback, but we previewed last week all these things they had to do to be successful. They didn't do any of those things. They did not contain Josh Allen in the pocket. They let him run all over the place and let him throw freely. Like I said, didn't get sacked. We needed the defense to step up. I really thought the return of Hightower and the linebackers were going to be the key factor. They were the worst part of the game. They got ran all over. They got bullied. And, you know, the score shows it. You know, 45 points. Like you said, that interception by Micah Hyde was one of the greatest interceptions I've seen. You know, if they score there on that drive, does that change the game a little bit? I don't think so, because the defense just showed who they were at the end of the year, and it was just not pleasant at all.
Yeah, all good points there. I thought the defense, like I said, when I predicted 17-12, I thought it was going to be, because it was so cold, it was going to be tough to score points. And then at the end of the day, you would need the defense to get one final stop to get off the field, and you wouldn't be able to bank on them. They couldn't get off the field at all. Like, I mean, what you know, Paul can touch on this stat, if I didn't catch it, of like, it's one of like the best offensive performances, just drive for drive, of what the Bills put up the other night. So I was just so disappointed with that. Paul, go ahead on your thoughts on the game.
A couple things. John, I think you're referring to the Buffalo never went backwards once in the entire game. The only time was when Trubisky knelt down at the end of the game.
Yeah, wow. That's what it was.
Yeah, I guess it never happened in the NFL before. John, there's a couple points. I mean, you could hash about, you know, Dave was right. Dawson Knox looked like Gronkowski. You know, Josh Allen made Tom Brady look like a second stringer. It was unbelievable. I mean, But you know what the thing is? What they do is they watch film. So here's what Bill has to do when he watches his film. Forget about the scoring. Forget about the blocks. Just find out who quit and who didn't. That's all you need to do. But get yourself a sheet of paper, get a nice couple of pencils, and just put down one side quit, the other side didn't quit.
Well, that'll be an easy form to fill out because Mac Jones and Kendrick Bourne and Nick Folk can go on the didn't quit side, and then the other 52 men on the roster can be put on the quit side.
Maybe that's true, but you'll have a whole new roster. The only thing I say is in their favor is that the Dallas Cowboys led the NFL in penalties, and they got 14 penalties the other day. Now, the Patriots are not even close to that league for that, so there are some things to look forward to. They can be fixed. It's going to take an awful lot of work, though. And money.
Yeah, definitely. I think we could do a whole episode on just playing, you know, hindsight on the season. And, you know, one or two games go your way, you got a totally different seed. You could be the one seed or the two seed if you figured things out right against a couple of those opponents. And so that's going into next year. I think there are a few tweaks. You don't put yourself in a great position because you spent so much in free agency and you probably got to build through the draft, especially if a lot of these veterans end up retiring, which, you know, could happen with McCourty, Hightower, Slater, guys like that. So tough road ahead, but I some good signs out of guys like, you know, Mac, Hunter Henry, Kendrick Bourne, and what we've got in the running game, but certainly a lot to build for there. Cove, thoughts on the game?
It was surprising, but it wasn't surprising. But when I'm thinking about the Patriots, I'm just thinking so much more macro and realizing that the time period that you're living through right now is not too dissimilar from, let's say, 2010, like 2009, 2010. So you got to figure that every few years you have to turn your roster over in the NFL. And they started a little bit in 2019 in Brady's last year, and then obviously in 2020, there were some big moves made, and that was kind of a throwaway year. And then this year you started to see a little bit of what you saw in like 2010, when you started to see guys like Ninkovich and Pat Chung and Gronk worked in. You started to see some new blood that could be part of a next run here, obviously with Mac. But at the same time, there's still a lot of guys that, you know, were hanging around the 2018 AFC Championship game. And I just think that right now you're overturning your roster. You don't have Tom Brady there like you did during previous roster turnovers where you competed for, you know, a spot in the AFC Championship game. And you're just basically trying to say, you know, kind of like Paul said, who quit and who didn't. But who's going to, you know, where are we at on defense? Who's going to be part of the long-term plan? I think they feel good about where they're at running back. It's concerning that Jacoby Myers is still their best receiver. I mean, literally, he's Mac's number one target. When you went out and, you know, brought all these flashy guys in, or at least at big money. So it's going to be very interesting. But I really have faith in the guys that are running the team. To, you know, kind of prepare for the next run. I guess the only question is this, is if Mac is just an above average quarterback, you know, who certainly could win 10 games in New England, but would have been run out of the league in Jacksonville, can you still go where the Patriots want to go with that type of quarterback in the league now? Because it's just so different than it was 25, 30 years ago, where you could have, you know, I talked to Paul about this the other night, where Doug Williams could win the Super Bowl. It's just not happening now. You know, I mean, look at even the losing Super Bowl quarterbacks in recent years. They're still very good.
Yeah, it's a good point. I'm really high on Mac going into his second year. I think people who are...
I think he's a good kid.
Yeah, I think people who are already... you know, going doomsday on what you have for a quarterback here is ridiculous. And even look on, you know, who we just played. I think, you know, one or two years into Josh Allen's time with the Bills, he was awful, ton of mistakes. And they stuck with him just because they knew the upside. And now look what you have. You have a guy who threw 5 touchdowns against the Bill Belichick, defense and embarrassed the greatest coach of all time and his, you know, new regime in Buffalo the other night. So I am by no means writing off Mac Jones or, you know, preparing for the worst for next year. We got some tweaks to make for sure. And I think we're going to make them, you know, big picture. I would love a huge splash in coaching. If we could somehow find a way to lure, Brian Flores back here, or get someone like that on that side of the defensive end, and get Matt Patricia. One sec, Cove, and get Matt Patricia out of here.
This year, that would be a
welcome. Sorry, Cove, what'd you say? Mike wasn't near you.
No. I apologize. I just wanted to say, I'm not sure if Flo's going to be a head coach somewhere next year, but you got a great shot at bringing Joe Judge back.
Yep.
And obviously, we can poke fun all we want at, you know, what he did with the Giants and his ridiculous press conferences. There was a noticeable drop off in special teams.
Definitely.
With the Patriots, and obviously it cost him some games. And Jake Bailey looks like he went completely sideways after being literally like the MVP of Super Bowl 55 or 53, you know, outside of Edelman. So just interesting.
Definitely. Dave, anything else on the game that stuck out to you?
Well, like I said, another one of my other points, keys to the game, which was again, did not happen, was I want, you know, if the Pats controlled the time of possession, we would have been successful. They, again, did the opposite. Mm-hmm. We didn't establish the run at all. I think, you know, our leading running back had Damien Harris had 30 yards rushing. So we didn't get anything going on the ground game. We were playing catch up the whole game. We were letting Josh Allen do whatever he wants. They controlled the time of possession. Couldn't get any stops. But
and we whiffed on our over under on N'Keal Harry yards.
Yeah. But you know, I'm rooting for this Buffalo Bills team to come out of the East. I think they're a fun team to root for. Josh Allen's a really good quarterback to root for. Good player. And you know, they do deserve a Super Bowl, for all the pain they've gone through. I'd like to see them come out of the East.
I'd like to see them beat the Chiefs. I'll be a little torn on who they end up facing if they get to the AFC Championship game, because I love Joe Burrow and I think that would be exciting, even though the Bills have had to, scratch and claw a lot more, over the last couple of decades than the Bengals, have. But I think you know, no one is probably dying to, outside of, you know, Kansas City is dying to see the Chiefs there again. They've been back to back years. I hope they go the way of the Seahawks. In my mind, Paul, anything else on the game?
No, you touched it. Other than there were six games last weekend, John, and only two were watchable, so we have something to look forward to.
And heavily influenced by those two games were heavily influenced by the referees. So that's about all you have to point to, is if the refs got heavily involved, it was the only shot at a decent game.
Right.
Cove, anything else around the NFL?
This game coming up in Tampa with the Rams and the Bucs is going to be outstanding. And, you know, Matthew Stafford, obviously, I mean, this is another big legacy game for him coming up. But I don't think that you can underappreciate what he's done this year. I mean, it's so easy to be the great player on a terrible team. You become like a benevolent figure. You don't really get a lot of the blame when things go wrong. And everybody feels bad for you. It's kind of like Paul Pierce. But the real test and why I think Pierce is so incredible is he put up, basically. When you gave him teammates and a legitimate coach and put him in a good situation, he was phenomenal. And that's kind of what you've seen with Stafford this year. You know, Paul Pierce is from Inglewood. Matt Stafford now works in Inglewood. And he's been awesome this year. And he came out and they decimated a really good team on Monday night. And that's going to be a hell of a game down there. And if Stafford wins that game, I will be the least surprised guy on this panel. But I'll tell you, you know, we were talking about the NFL and the MVP and Rodgers, and Paul and I agreed on, you know, his candidacy. And I was talking about how fascinating he is. And not to take anything away from Rodgers, but how can you not say that Tom's not the MVP this year with the season that he's had, with how crazy it's been down there, people getting hurt left and right, and they're the defending champs. I mean, still remember that there hasn't been a defending champ to win it all again since the Pats did it in 2004. I mean, that was, what, 18 years ago?
Cove, he's older than all three of the other NFC head coaches.
I mean, just absolutely phenomenal. And I think Paul's already got like three of the $75 Brady brand t-shirts on the way to the house right now. So, you know, it's just really incredible. And look at that. I mean, that was an 8.5-point spread on Sunday, and they covered it with ease. That was just a decimation against a pretty good team that was really hot. And they went out there and controlled it. And I mean, that was, you know, as good of a Tom playoff performance, you know, I mean, it was just unbelievable.
With a lot of questions surrounding the Bucks, and they slammed the door shut on that. This is a really good test for them and for Brady. If he gets back to another conference championship, especially with what's happened to the Bucks over the last few weeks, that'll be so impressive. I think that's it. Dave, anything else for the NFL?
I'm going to say, I think Brady will get back to the NFC. Like, when has he not?
Why would you bet against him?
Yeah, when has he proved us wrong? You know, whenever you question him. Last year we questioned them when they went through that, you know, rut, and he comes through in the playoffs and dominates. And last week they dominate. I don't see why they don't. I understand the Rams are it's going to be – it's another one of those things in his book, you know, this Rams game. If he wins it, it'd be so impressive. Because this Rams team – they showed so much on Monday night that they were the best one, besides the Bills, probably the best team coming out of this weekend.
You know, if you're the Rams, you spend all this money on getting these players there and getting the quarterback that you think you need, and you had a shot. You were just a few points away from, you know, knocking off the Bill Belichick, Tom Brady Patriots a couple of years ago. There's so much at stake for them in this game and this season. Aaron Rodgers, an unbelievable season, you know, front runner to be MVP right now. He's got one Super Bowl. His legacy is so much at stake, and you've got a new coach there trying to figure things out. And then you've got the 49ers, who had the Super Bowl in their hands 2 years ago and just gave it to the Chiefs, gave it right back with Kyle Shanahan coaching, which, you know, lost the Falcons. A lot of his, you know, play calling lost the Falcons their Super Bowl, let the Patriots back into it, and he let the Chiefs back into it and lost that Super Bowl. So every other team in the NFC has so much to prove, and Brady has nothing to prove, which makes him so dangerous here. The fact that he's got nothing to lose, it could be a bad recipe for the rest of the NFC.
I'm looking forward to this weekend. Going to be some good football, I think.
Of course. Paul, anything else on the NFL before we switch gears?
Yeah, Matt had the Philadelphia Eagles as a formidable opponent. They beat the Redskins and the Giants in the playoffs. They're pitiful. That was a joke to have them even in the playoffs. So that was Tampa Bay got a bye last week, just as Green Bay did. So now we'll see the real guys this weekend.
A true seven seed. I love it. All right, gang. Dave, Caesar B's first. Your choice.
I mean, let's go with the Celtics this time. I feel like we always go with the B's first.
Celtics, we're getting things going in the right direction. The last time we talked, and I outlined five games ahead. Those games being Philly, Chicago, New Orleans, Charlotte, and Portland. And I said, you got to go 4-1 in those games. Right now, you're 2-2 and about to play the Portland Trail Blazers tomorrow. There's a chance you could be 2-3. You should have, you know, there was so many, you were in the game last night, Dave. So many chances to get back in that game, even with Bob Williams and Marcus Smart out. Very, very disappointing. The team's back to 500 after what seemed like every time they take, you know, one step forward, it's two steps back. It's a very frustrating team.
It's, and, you know, I'd be intrigued if I had, like, season tickets or went to, you know, a couple games a month, because watching Tatum last night, the body language.
He looked hungover.
Yeah, well, it just, like, you know, the body language, talking to the refs, everything was just so bad. And watching, you know, his other teammates putting in a lot more effort, I thought. I hope it wasn't just a one-time thing, but just watching that game, like, that's your top guy. Like, he's totally off the table, tradable-wise. That's why I don't want to judge last night's game, but it was just awful. He was 0-for-7 from 3. Couldn't do anything on the offensive end. I mean, that game was just so frustrating in terms of defense played well at times. You got steals. They threw in that zone defense, which was a good coaching decision by Udoka, because they couldn't stop them. They couldn't stop Terry one-on-one. They couldn't stop Bridges one-on-one. They switched to the zone. They got stops, and they couldn't score. So it's just a really frustrating game. I think no Bob Williams was huge. Mm. I think getting him back is going to ignite a lot of energy into this team, but I don't know how much longer we can go in terms of, you know, is this team really going to be a top five team in the East? I don't know if that's going to be the case this year.
Even though they lost last night, huge development with the Raptors losing and you moving up a spot to the ninth seed. So you're just one spot out of the playoff race. Cove, thoughts on the C's?
The worst game in the recent stretch was the Philadelphia game, where it was just such a flat performance. I mean, that was the one that stood out to me. I'll be honest, I saw only the second half of the game last night. Obviously, Dave was there. He has, you know, bird's eye view. But, that stuff concerns me with Tatum, too. It really does. You would have thought that maybe Udoka coming in would help that. But, I mean, I'm just not sure – you know, sometimes who some of these younger guys in the NBA respect. And, you know, the one thing that I was kind of nervous about in terms of that they kind of gave the keys to the car to these kids, you know, I mean, they got Brad and Danny essentially fired. The Jays got Brad and Danny fired, you know, but they didn't want to just, you know, pay Brad to do nothing. So that's why he's doing a job he's not qualified for. So these guys got these guys fired, and then they convinced them to go and hire a first-time coach because it was trendy with Steve Nash. Well, it didn't work with Jason Kidd. And I'm just wondering why you don't have a guy like Rick Carlisle in here, who just beat you the other night, too. So, I mean, like I said the other day on my TikTok, this team is just really broken right now.
No, we beat Rick Carlisle both times.
No, excuse me. I'm sorry. But I'm just saying that would have been a guy that you could bring in there.
Oh, that would have gone so poorly. I know where your heart is, Cove, but they would have ruined that too.
Well, I mean, I just would have loved to have seen him come back. But I'm real concerned, obviously, about, you know, this culture and this hierarchy on this team.
Yeah.
And how it's really disintegrated in the last couple of years. I mean, it has disintegrated really quickly. If you're just, you know, looking at life from a calendar perspective, you know, it takes 9 months to conceive and deliver a baby kind of thing. You know, this has really all fallen apart in about 24 months, like half of a college career. You know, you started as a freshman. There was no COVID. The Celtics looked like the team of the 21st century in Boston. And then 2 years later, everybody's wearing masks and the Celtics are a dysfunctional mess. It's like, what the hell happened? You know, it's like it hits. No, I'm serious, though. It hits you like a whirlwind. And it's so crazy to think, because we used to rave about the culture and we love Marcus Smart and Brad and, you know, wait till he gets some real players. And, you know, it's just very, very, very disheartening, because some of the efforts are just so lackluster. And it's not even like watching the Lakers, where you've just got a disjointed roster of old guys and ball hogs and stuff like that. You know, at least that's like understandable. You know, who said this on the post game last night? It was, you know, Mr. Basketball, Michael Felger, was actually talking about just how the Celtics were just so out hustled in the game last night. You know, just purely out hustled. So.
It was, I got to say, just from, that was another thing I noticed. It wasn't like Charlotte was getting fast break points. They were just moving up the court faster. And it looked like the Celtics were just jogging back. There was no energy. It looked so lackluster. It was hard to watch, because that's what we loved. I know we hate going back to the Isaiah Thomas years.
We don't hate that.
Well, we just thought so much more once we got, you know, these young talent, the Kyrie, all that stuff. It's sad, because you're missing that big time with these teams, big time.
Yeah, it's all good points. Paul, anything on the C's?
Yeah, maybe they could have hired Becky Hammond. Really gone, really gone the other way, because Dave, seriously, when you know you keep seeing Tatum heaving up these threes, why can't you just die? Just get a, you know, try and go in and get a layup. Go to the free throw line, do something differently than, you know, his body language was absolutely putrid. The one, Dave, I do have a question, though. On the trade that was made the other day, Celtics got Ball and somebody, the one good player in the deal went to the Nuggets, who can shoot a three-pointer. Forbes used to be on Milwaukee. Why couldn't we grab him in a deal?
Your guess is as good as mine, Paul. I don't know. I know that trade was more to get that $6.3 million, you know, trade exception, or to get right below the luxury tax line. But I don't know if these two players that we got are even going to be, you know, because they're both injured, right? So
yeah.
We're not even going to see him.
It was like a John Henry move, and that's what I took it as. So
yeah, it's a good point. I will give the Celtics this: it was looking like they were on the other side of staying below 500, and it was going to be that way for a while, and they figured out a way to put a few wins together and go on a little bit of a streak, and they're 500 right now. I'm still holding out hope for that 5-game win streak. It's got to come sooner rather than later because the season's only so long. But they got to figure out a way to do it. Maybe it's an all-star break thing that gets this together. But they got to find a way to get this group to gel. Okay, excellent. This the show. Everyone has taken their Zoloft, and we are on to the Bruins, the exciting team in town. Dave, I'll let you lead us off with the 10 of their last 12 winning Bruins.
Yeah, I mean, we talked last time they were coming off some big wins, Washington, Tampa Bay, riding high, beating Nashville at home on that Saturday matinee, and then you get the big game, Tuukka starting the big game against an Eastern Conference power this year in Carolina, and you lay an egg on Willie O'Ree night, too.
Oh,
so I'm not going to put too much stock into that loss. They just didn't show up. Tuukka did not look good, specifically with his rebound control. I mean, a few of those goals were, you know, rebounds that if any four of us got our stick on it, we would have had a clean shot on net. So that's going to be rust over time. That stuff takes a long time to get back. So I'm not going to put a whole lot of stock into that loss. But the win tonight was great. I think the call at the end to give us a power play was a little chintzy. I don't think you're going to get that with other refs, but you know, you took advantage. If Marchand is seriously hurt, you know, he was out of last tonight's game. He exited early. If he's gone for a month, 2 months, you're in deep trouble because he has carried you.
One of the best players in the league.
He, and it is a crime that he is not an all-star. He is a top 5 player in the league. There's 3 guys I can name on top of my head that are better than him, but he's a top 5 player in the league, and he means so much to this team. So if he's out for a while, that's a big problem.
Well said. Paul, anything on the Bruins?
No, Dave kind of recapped it nicely. I throw that game out the other night. You know what happens on those ceremonies. Although you have to give the Bruins a whole lot of credit. They were the first team to have a black player, Willie O'Ree. I think that's outstanding. And now he's going to be getting the Medal of Honor, too. So that's a big deal. I think they should play it up more. And I would play it up more with number 22 because Brad Park wore that number. And I'm shocked his number didn't get retired. So good for the Bruins.
Yeah, it is good for the Bruins. And I don't know the Patriots history on everything there, but the two teams in the Boston Garden have a better history with that than the Red Sox do. So they at least have that going for them. Cove, anything on the Bees of late?
I mean, you know, how can you not be encouraged by this team? And, you know, it kind of snuck up on you a little bit. I mean, they were off for a little bit over the holidays, so you kind of forgot about it, and everybody's kind of bemoaning the Celtics and wondering what's going on with the Patriots. But, you know, you Bruins came back, and you're like, wow, you know, this team's, you know, hovering around 10 games over 500. You know, they've got Rask back, which, you know, obviously was a lightning rod type of topic, but it was certainly the right move to make. And then, you know, you just look at with the spirit that they played and you say, hey, listen, this team is super solid. They're going to make the playoffs again. You never know what can happen. And, you know, I think obviously still too, you're in a phase, even with bringing Rask back, because I know Marchand is carrying you, but just like Dave said, you know, McAvoy's goal was just so unbelievable this evening. And you look at this team and you think, wow, you're still handing it off to some, you know, kind of new blood, younger guys. And even, like I said, kind of changing the veterans and stuff like that. I just really love the direction. I really do. I think it's, you know, kind of a quiet rebuild a little bit within the walls of a successful team. And I just love Bruce Cassidy. That's the thing that just kind of keeps coming back to me. I mean, it's crazy to think that he's already been on board 5 years. He's been on board 5 years and he's just been just excellent. He really has. I mean, he's already been to a cup final. He's a really good coach.
Yeah, when a lot of questions were coming his way, when things were really in doubt before the COVID break, he made the right tweaks with the lines and the whole energy of that locker room, and there were a lot of questions.
Every time, John. I mean, he really has. You know, anytime that there's been any sort of slight question, I mean, he's answered the bell, and those guys love playing for him too, which is, you know, in the NHL, it's half the battle.
Yeah, and there was a lot of gossip surrounding what was going on in the Bruins locker room, and he put that to bed real quick with what he's, you know, whipped that team into being able to do the last 12 games. One word answer from everyone. Who's going to have a bigger trade deadline, Paul, the Celtics or the Bruins?
Oh, that's a good one, John. I would say the Celtics.
Gove.
The Green.
Dave.
Bruins.
I got to go Bruins, too. And I'll let you close us out here, Dave, on the Bruins and the episode. Your pal, Paul Bissonnette, was floating the idea of trading someone like a Jeremy Swayman for, you know, a defenseman like a Nugent Hopkins or some name like that as you gear up for a cup run. What are your thoughts on something like that?
I hate that idea so much. Yep. Especially you saw Ullmark tonight. That was a huge concern. He let up a goal that, again, I don't want to use us as examples, but I think four of us would have saved. It was from way outside the dots, right at his helmet. Could have easily made the glove save, and it went right over his head. And we can't have that going forward. That's a guy, you know, if you're a team like, there's a bunch of teams out there that have serious issues with goaltending. If you can get Ullmark in a trade, he's at great value. He's got term. You know, he's played well this year. And if you bring Swayman back up or whoever back up, I'd prefer that. I'm not trading Swayman at all. He's shown what he can do. He's only, you know, 23, 24 years old. Yeah. So absolutely not. But they're going to have a big trade deadline because, you know, they have talented guys like DeBrusk who wants out. So you're going to get some new blood in here. I think there's going to at least be one trade that's going to happen. You're going to get some new blood at the deadline. And yeah, I mean, I think they got to get some more defensive depth on the back end. So there's a lot of stuff they need to fix before, if they want to go for a Stanley Cup run. You know, the Taylor Hall Pastrnak thing's been great. That line, you know what you get in the first line, the third and fourth line have provided a bunch of energy, but you're going to need more to compete with the Carolinas, the Tampa Bays, the Floridas. It's going to be a lot.
Well said. Cove, concluding thoughts.
Thoughts are baseball. Nobody's talking about the fact that there's a labor shortage right now, and that there may be no spring training, and you know, who knows how long that could extend. And you know, certainly we know that the people who run Major League Baseball like to dig their heels in. But tell me how incredible this is. JD Drew is so much richer in contracts, in just pure contracts, than John Elway, or you know, certainly even like a, you know, some modern quarterbacks, like even like Aaron Rodgers. There's so much money in baseball. Look at, you know, Paul was even talking about how much money there was, you know, sunk into the two starting pitchers in that Red Sox Yankees one game playoff between Eovaldi and Gerrit Cole. Just so much money in the game of baseball. And yet nobody's talking about it. We just went through a whole podcast, and obviously, you know, just a few months ago, it was an all baseball podcast, and nobody's even concerned, not about, hey, how's the team going to be, or they didn't sign anybody, or, you know, Kyne Bloom, whatever. No, there may not be a season that's, you know, and it's just crazy to me how it just weaves in and out of the subconscious like that. I mean, it just, again, maybe no season, not even, are they going to be good playoffs, whatever. No, no games.
COVID, such a good point. I've been kind of in denial on that reality, and it's just looking every day more and more like that's the road that things are heading down, and that they're not going to come to an agreement in time, which could really screw things up for the start of the season or the season in general. Paul, concluding thoughts.
Yeah, John.
John, I'm sorry to interrupt Paul. Well, Paul can do this too, but somebody on the panel should say hi to our biggest fan, Rachel Murphy. Rachel, thank you so much for tuning in and loving the show so much and supporting family and friends. We love you, and thank you so much for checking us out.
Yes, thank you, Rachel. Well said, Cove. Paul, any concluding thoughts? That's a tough one to top.
It is. Speaking of Rachel, that company that she has, Rachel B. Productions, is fantastic. But moving on, John, I saw that Rusney Castillo signed with the Washington Nationals. If you don't know who he is, he received $72 million from the Red Sox, and the Red Sox got back maybe 72 cents for that deal.
Yeah. And I've heard that, you know, someone float the idea of there needs to be a documentary on Rusnik Castillo roaming around Pawtucket with $70 million and what that was like for a four-year span.
And John, one other thing. Baseball players crave money more than anything else. They're like Wall Street bankers. So when April 15th comes, they'll be playing because they don't get paid for spring training. They get their money when the regular season starts. The owners would like to move the games back so that the weather is better and they make more money. But the players are only concerned about the money. So they'll be playing baseball, Matt, by April 15th.
I like it. Good predictions all around and good thank yous. We'll close it out there. Dave, really good concluding thoughts on the goaltending situation, the future of the Bruins. They're our only bright spot in the city right now, unless the Celtics can find a way to get that 4 or 5 game win streak that I've been begging for the last few months. Congrats to the Bills. What a win for that team. Don't go out and embarrass both of us by losing to the Chiefs this weekend. That'll make that loss even tougher. Don't grow up. All right, gang. Great work. We'll talk soon.